24th. 27th.
Somebody help us.
25th.
March 25th. Well, this 90-day session has all confused, guys. You have to apologize. But 25th, and it is a 5 minutes after 2. With us today in the Chun Transportation Room is Senator Wilkins, Senator Cowdery, and myself, Senator Kukash. And we're here today to talk about Senate Bill 268. And with that, I'd like to have the sponsor of the legislation step forward to give us a brief overview. If you would please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Max Hensley. I'm a staff to Senator John Ellis, represents downtown and midtown Anchorage in the state Senate. The purpose of the introduction of Senate Bill 268, the Kubota Oversight Bill, is to continue the trend of open and transparent government that we've seen over the past few years. Any potential Kinnick Arm Bridge, even given the most optimistic price estimates, would be one of the most expensive public works projects that our state has seen. The amount of money at stake, the long-term fiscal commitments, and the effect on the neighborhoods that it would impact require that there be some form of governmental oversight. And the legislative body has proven that it is an appropriate place for that to occur. This bill establishes a 60-day public comment period for any contract that the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority could sign to build a bridge, followed by a 60-day period for legislative approval. It also contains a consumer protection provision which would limit price increases for tolls to help commuters in Anchorage and Mat-Su who would come to depend on the bridge. This project is enormous in dollars, in time, in its impact on our state. The legislative oversight is just one small safeguard that can ensure that it is in the best interest of the state and the best interest of the public. I'm going to cut my comments short and allow some other presenters to answer questions, to present their points of view. I'd be happy to answer questions from the committee if you have any. Would note that the bill is supported by the Government Hill Community Council, where the bridge would hit land on the Anchorage side. The Anchorage Daily News has editorialized in favor of the bill, and the municipality of Anchorage has written a letter of support as well. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Just for the record, Senator Ellis has had another meeting.
Yes, Senator Ellis is in another meeting and would also be happy to answer questions at a later date.
Okay. So. Senator Cowdery?
Yeah. What, with all this oversight, what do you think it would do with the financing committee, community, if they say, well, we got to have the legislator approve this, got the 60-day this, 60-day that? I mean, to me, that's just a way to try to kill the bill. Is that true? Is that the intent?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, absolutely not.
What in your mind would that do then?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, any investor who came to be involved in a project of this stake, of this size, would need to be assured that the project was supported by state government and not simply. And I believe that that legislative approval and comment from the citizens of the state would allow them that security of knowing that that the project they're signing on for is something that is supported by the people of the state and will have the backing of state government.
Well, I think in my town, I think this is a very needed project for safety purposes, and I've supported this from day one. You know, how many people drive in from the Boss Hill every day to work in Anchorage full time?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an exact number, but it's certainly very significant.
And there's lots of accidents on that because of that.
Absolutely.
And if we ever I think the development of Anchorage, I've been in Anchorage since I was 20, and I've seen the wetlands disappear, filled in, and this and that, and it's going to continue to do that until we get another place to build, because no matter what the regulations are, it's going to get really tight on finding land, and of course expensive too. And I believe that this is needed, very much needed, for the public, and for the price of real estate in Anchorage, to get the new home buyer, first home, it's almost impossible anybody's qualified with the prices of just the land, not the buildings. So anyway, that's my thoughts on this. I think that it's to put these public review and the legislature to review this. Number one, if it's a project, New York will decide if it's feasible or not. But I don't think we should, or wherever the finance committee, and I think put all these hurdles up and just more or less kill the project. And I don't think that's in the best interest of the state.
Sorry,
or
he's asking the first question. This bill's not going to stay. Thank you. Do you have any comment?
No.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from members of the committee for this presenter? If not, thank you very much. And you'll be in the room. We'd like to ask
I won't go anywhere.
Other individuals to step up.
Could I ask one more
sure,
question?
Sure.
What is the amount of public money that's invested in this so far?
To date, Senator Cowdery, through the chair, the legislature has appropriated $105 million towards Kibata, and approximately $34 million of that has been spent so far.
And the environmental impact statement is done?
I believe it's in process, but the folks from Kibata, I could probably speak to that.
Yeah, let's go ahead and have them speak. Thank you. Mr. Wirtz, would you like to come forward and bring whoever you'd like with you and make a presentation to the committee?
Thank you, Chairman.
Excuse me, just for a second. I'm going to excuse myself just for a minute. I have another bill up in another committee, and ask Senator Cowdery if he would take over the chair just for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
So, for the record, I'm George Wirtz, Chairman of the seven-member Knick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority Board of Directors. Knick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, more frequently referred to as Kibata, and with your permission, I'll use that shorthand today. I'm accompanied by Kibata's Executive Director, a full-time salaried position, and this is Andrew Nemec, and accompanying me here today, and in a few minutes we'll ask him to add to this presentation. I'd also like to acknowledge that of the seven-member board, three are citizen members, myself, and the former Matsu mayor and the vice chairman of Kibata is Darcy Salmon, and I am led to believe that he is at the Matsu LIO and available online and may have signed up to speak. The other citizen member is a former deputy commissioner of DOT, Dave Haugen, who was acting at the time we last tried to build this bridge in the early 80s. And brings to the board incredible depth of knowledge as to what we've done in years past. We have two legislative members who are not here today, and two administrative members. The Deputy Commissioner of DOT, Frank Richards, is in the audience, and the Deputy Commissioner of Revenue is not available. Today I'd like to give a very brief overview of the origins of Kibata, its activities to date, and where we are in the current time. I'd also like to offer just a few words on some of the popular misconceptions about what this project is, and then turn it over to Andrew Nemec for a more in-depth discussion of some of the broader issues. Mr. Chairman, we're happy to respond to questions at any time if that meets with your approval, and certainly would welcome the opportunity to submit written comments after the hearing if there are questions or other issues you'd like us to reply to. It's almost 5 years to the day when the 2003 legislature pulled up a 20-year-old bill, initially done by Joe Hayes, for the creation of a toll authority. That toll authority for the crossing of the Knick Arm River. And unfortunately, the oil economy went to pieces in the mid-80s, and that project never got off the ground. All there was a draft environmental impact statement written. But by updating the legislation to today's needs, it was before the legislature, and I'm pleased to report that in 2003, that passed both houses with only three nay votes in total. So I think it speaks well for the intention of this body to expand its capabilities in financing major public works projects and expand our capital infrastructure. So what's happened so far? Well, the initial efforts were to gather the field data, both technical and environmental, and do a number of studies and start the National Environmental Policy compliance process, more frequently referred to as the EIS process, with the Federal Highway Administration as the lead agency. In those initial months, we looked for a financing plan that we referred to as the three-legged stool. We anticipated one-third of the cost coming from a federal appropriation, one-third from the state, and one-third from revenue bonds. Unfortunately, it wasn't long before the Bridge to Nowhere label hit Alaska, and its impacts were substantial. First thing that happened is the federal funding was dropped from over $200 million to something in the neighborhood of a little over 90. State funding was dropped from the governor's budgets in its entirety, and the bond market was telling us that it was very unlikely that they could sell revenue bonds for the total amount needed at that time. So we had to take a new approach. Our three-legged stool broke apart. Fortunately, the transportation bill that our own Congressman Young chaired through Congress, called the TLU bill, authorized for the first time public-private partnerships for toll roads and toll bridges. And so we came back to the legislature in 2006 and said, would you amend the statute to give Kubota the opportunity to enter into these new public-private partnership deals? And you concurred and did. The 2006 budget also included a little over $100 million for DOT, which was the federal money that was remaining and the state match to that, and the previous speaker spoke to that. I will note that that funding stream, that budget action of 2006, is what has been paying for the EIS. It is sufficient to cover a good portion of the regulatory permits, and we anticipate it to be sufficient to get through the procurement phases of this project. Ultimately, we would hope that the remainder of those public dollars would be equivalent to about 10 to 15% of the construction costs, which would in effect be the state of Alaska's equity in this project, and the balance coming from a private investor. In those last 5 years, Kubota has also been successful in qualifying for participation in certain federal loan programs for transportation projects, and Mr. Nemec will speak to those more specifically, but leave it said that one is authorized and one is pending. So let's look at where we stand today. Federal final environmental impact statement has been published in the Federal Register. The final step of that will be the issuance of a record of decision by the Federal Highway Administration, and that action is pending. Kubota has qualified through a two-step procurement policy following Federal Highway and ADOT regulations, procurement regulations, to international consortia as potential investors, as potential partners to the state. And the next step is to finalize the conditions of the request for proposal and send that out to these two qualified consortium to get hard dollar proposals back. So at this point, let me clarify some perhaps misconceptions. The Kinnick Arm Crossing is not just a public works project. It is, in its true sense of the word, a public-private partnership. In other words, we're like a franchise. We're selling a revenue stream of tolls that comes in over a period of 55 years in exchange for the investor financing, designing, constructing, and operating and maintaining a Kinnick Arm Crossing for that period of time, at end of which the facility will be owned by the state and will revert to the state in its entirety, and either Kavada or a successor organization could take it on. But most importantly, this is a franchise that the investor is expected to share that revenue stream with the state in the form of Kavada, so that certain reserves can be built up for expanding the system or conducting any other changes that are wanted as the years go by. The RFP, request for proposal, will contain the terms of that, what I call franchise, and the technical provisions for design and construction of the bridge. And that document, although it's not yet been finalized, will be made public as soon as we have words that we can all agree to and conditions that are satisfactory to the administration, to the Kavada board, and as far as we can see, to the potential investors. We're not there yet, but we're getting closer. I did comment before the meeting started, we would welcome an opportunity to brief legislative committees at any time upon your request. And of course, this information is all available to the public as it's developed, as it has been for the last 5 years. And we would invite your attention to our homepage, KinnickArmBridge.com, which is exhausting in documentation and detail. Some questions have been raised about toll changes, and we would point out that unlike the proposed amendments, this Senate Bill 268, that intends to give toll change authority to one person, the current statute leaves the toll authority board of 7 people that would review and approve toll changes. We believe a board of 7, consisting of public members, administration members, and elected members of the House and Senate, would bring to that decision a far broader perspective of the best interests of Alaska than a one-person toll-setting authority. So, following the expectations for inflation, we would hope to have an agreement that will attract private investors to this partnership. At that point, let me say, if you have any questions of my presentation, I would like to turn this over to Mr. Nemec and let him carry on with another overview.
I'd like to maybe ask you, how many meetings have you had to the public in different areas of this? Approximately, you don't have to have exactly.
Senator Cowdery, we have distributed a document to you, and there's available copies for the public out front. It's 17 pages long, and on page 14, there lists the public meetings, 10 with Government Hill, 4 with other community councils, 8 non-governmental organizations, 16 other groups, formal public open houses, 6 times, 5 other public information meetings. And the list goes on. And what's not in this page 14 is the fact that we have also responded to requests from business groups, service clubs, and others who would like us to give presentations. There have been over 100 of those presentations in the last 5 years to keep the citizens of South Central informed. And I already mentioned that website, which is an exhausting repository of documentation. So thank you for the question.
Yes. Does the Valley support this concept of the meetings that you've had up there?
I will answer yes, and if former Mayor Darcy Salmon, our Vice Chairman of Kavada, is online and has a chance to speak, he can elaborate. We have run some public opinion polls, and the support in round numbers is about 70%, a little stronger in the Valley than in the city. But nevertheless, it's a nice solid number. In Alaska, it's hard to get much more than 70% on anything. So we believe that the idea of paying a toll is okay, and we've done some sensitivity testing on how much the public users are liable to willing to pay, and we haven't hit that pushback point where they say, "Oh no, I won't use it." So we're talking in the realm of $5 inflated to whatever year you want to look at.
And does AGC, Associated General Contractors, support this?
I don't know if we have a formal resolution. Do we have a formal resolution?
I'm not aware if we do or not.
I don't think we have a formal resolution from AGC, the General Contractors Association.
Does the administration support this concept?
The administration has been very interested in what it is we'll put into the final RFP, and right now, as I said earlier, we have not reached agreement on those terms and conditions. Earlier on, we've had conversations that were very supportive because of so many of the strong advocates, and those that will be the users are from the Mat-Su Valley, the fastest growing population in the state, the 28th fastest growing county in the nation. It's serving a need.
And one last question, if I could. How about the Chambers of Commerce of the Valley and Anchorage?
Yes, we have a good list of resolutions, starting with this a position statement by the State Chamber of Commerce, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, the Wasilla Chamber of Commerce. Momentarily, I'm not sure about Palmer, but in parallel to that are actions by the various regulatory bodies like the Anchorage Assembly supporting it, adding it to the long-range transportation plan, the Mat-Su Assembly, the Wasilla City Council, etc.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have more you want to make a presentation on? And I'd be glad to hear that now.
I'd like to let Mr. Nemec speak, if I may.
Sure. Yes. Go ahead, please. Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andrew Nemec. I am the Executive Director for the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. And today, I'd like to summarize some of the information that's in this handout that's made available. And my comments will be more in context of some of the concerns that we hear out there. We at Kubota recognize that the Kinnick Arm Crossing is one of the largest projects in Alaska, and there remains a high level of interest from the public, industry, and the legislature. One of our primary goals is to maximize value and benefits to the state. Extensive analysis has confirmed the legislature's directive that a completed toll bridge across the Kinnick Arm will develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of the state's transportation system. We recognize public awareness and participation is expected, and we endorse the governor's policy on an open process. It should also be understood that we are in the middle of a procurement process that is being conducted in accordance with the state procurement code under well-established regulations. The recently submitted Senate Bill 268 and House Bill 365 proposed to severely limit Kubota's authority to enter into a public-private partnership and other contracts. Our proposed partnership is one that allows us to leverage limited public funds to deliver a significant infrastructure project for Alaska. It must provide a viable long-term investment opportunity for the developer, and it must protect the public's interest. The second part, we have pre-qualified the two consortia that Mr. Wirch has identified. And the second portion of that procurement is requesting proposals from our qualified developers. And these proposals would include firm financial and technical commitments. During the deliberative process leading to our development of the request for proposals, we have heard concerns from the administration, from the public, members of the legislature, and our qualified developers. Generally, the public and the administration are concerned about risk allocation and the financial obligations that would fall to the state and potential impacts to the federal highway program and other projects. Our developers require a viable investment opportunity. They need to know that the state is behind the project and is committed to its obligations. Kubota shares these concerns. And more significantly, we need to resolve them prior to completing our procurement. The RFP, when finalized, will be made available to the public for review. As we move forward with our project development, our primary focus is on completing the NEPA process that involves supporting the Federal Highway Administration as they address comments on the final environmental impact statement and if they develop the record of decision. We also must apply for the necessary environmental permits. Concurrent with these activities, we will continue a public involvement process and develop a recommendation that addresses the concerns raised and allows us to move forward with certainty. The legislation before you is not compatible with our procurement process and ultimately does not ensure the best value to the state. We recommend and respectfully urge the legislature to take no action on Senate Bill 268 and House Bill 365. Thank you.
Okay, well, House. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions from the senators for the presenters? Yes, Senator Cowdery.
So either one here, does other transportation entities, trucking entities and everything, do they support this in your?
I can answer to the Trucking Association, and I think their comments and support of the project are geared towards getting a lot of the truck traffic out of the Anchorage area, so it would go directly north and not through Anchorage and up through Wasilla.
Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're saying in your last comment that the trucking industry or the trucking traffic was going to go north and stay away from downtown Anchorage. If it's going to be starting off from Government Hill, I don't see how it can avoid downtown Anchorage, especially if you're coming in a truck coming in from Kenai or down towards Seward. Maybe I'm wrong in my ideas, but clear me up, I guess, is how they're going to avoid going downtown if they're going to go through Fort.
Truck traffic generated at the port, I would assume that some of the traffic going north out of the Kenai and Seward would probably continue up to Glen Highway.
Okay, so they wouldn't be using that. If I can continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Olson?
There was a comment made earlier on, and I think one of the concerns that this bill has is that the total amount budgeted for the state has been $105 million. Is that true? And $34 million has been spent by Cabot already? Can you give me an idea what the $34 million has been spent on? How much of that is, I mean, are these board members paid? And if they are, what do you have to show for $34
million? I'll answer about the board member activity because we're not salaried full-time employees. The original statute authorized a stipend of $300 a day for a board time. And expenses if there's travel involved, like the trip here. As far as the products, I can kind of quickly run through that. The most important is to measure the end result and the final environmental impact statement. A substantial body of work had to go into that. That's the cost of all those studies, the technical data gathering, the development of conceptual designs. Secondly is the whole bidding documents, which is the draft RFP, the draft contract, the technical provisions. In other words, what are the engineering considerations that they have to do? But again, I want to say that this is not like just going out and buying a bridge. We're selling a revenue stream. This is a trade-off. We say you can have a portion of this revenue stream if you do these things and pay the state of Alaska for the privilege of having that franchise. So it's a new way of thinking, and many of the kind of traditional sort of ways of doing business don't fit perfectly. So we take the best of what we had, and we apply it to this new opportunity and see if we can't put this deal together. Andrew, what have I left out?
I think that pretty much covers it.
Oh, okay. Well, let's look specifically at the EIS. What does that cost? What has that cost us so far? Do you have any idea?
That's the bulk of the...
I mean, is it like $10 million or $30 million? $30 million?
I'd say it's 25 plus.
$25 million. And on a project like this that's 600, if I could continue, Mr. Chairman, a project like this that at least at that point, at one time was budgeted at $600 million is probably going to be, I think, significantly more than that with the price of steel going up is, you know, tell you the truth. I just came back from a scrap iron look around the state to see if there was anything up there, and I said, you know, everything's under snow up here. We don't have any idea. So it gives you the value of what people, and this is stuff going to Asia. The price is going to be pretty much, I think, higher than $600 million with the price of raw material that's out there. But is the EIS of $30 million comparable to other projects that are of a billion-dollar magnitude?
I would say it is, and also I would say that it is also... telling of the actual work that's gone into addressing the concerns that are associated with this project.
Okay. And $34 million of state money have been spent on this. How much federal money has been spent so far?
The bulk of that would be federal funds matched by state funds.
Oh, so $34 million is not just state money?
Correct.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Roughly 10% would be state money.
Any private money spent on this?
Not yet.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Member Senator Wilkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three. And let's continue on with what Senator Olson has spoken of. Could you give us, if not today, at a future time, your most current estimate of the complete cost of this project? We've talked about $600 million now for about 4 years. So I suspect that there should be an update on that. So if you could, do you have it now?
Senator Wilkin, certainly we can and we will. But I do want to point out that the final decision is on the investors.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel it's going to be X and they're willing to finance that and they make a hard dollar proposal to us that pays the state for this privilege and delivers what we ask, then yeah. Our guesses at cost are less important than theirs. They're the ones putting the money on the table. Yeah. So, but we have a number. Four years ago, we said 400, but then we added another 50% for contingency, so the 600 was usable and may still be usable, but it isn't the financing package. The first few years of this constructed project, when it opens for traffic, will not pay the debt, will not pay back a profit to the investor. So you have to balance out the shortfall for the first maybe 10, 15 years against the back end gain. You may wonder why people are willing to do that. And I will say in the international market, there's a lot of retirement money, like the United States uses Social Security, but the government manages. Other countries, like Australia, Spain, and some European countries, have put their retirement funds, like Social Security, in the hands of private banks. And they're very anxious to find long-term investments. You've got an employee who's going to work for 20, 30 years. He's going to live another 20, 30 years. You want to put your money where you know it's going to pay back to protect those investors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's happening in the global sense. In the United States, it's happening too. Texas, Virginia, Chicago, Indianapolis, Indiana, I should say. We're slow come to the party as the United States. Alaska is actually kind of in the vanguard. If we're successful, and I want to caution you, just being here today doesn't mean this is going to work. But if we're successful and attract investors, then remember that they're the one taking the risk. They're the one that's going to have to sharpen a pencil and give us a hard dollar proposal.
Yeah, I guess I see it a little differently. We have talked before for a number of years about expected tolls because there is an option to this bridge. The distance between that bridge and Wasilla is a matter of a half a mile. So there is a transference of route. If the tolls get too high. So if do you have a range, a low or a high at this point, what you think the tolls are going to be required to support this project? And that loops back then to the estimate of what this project is going to cost, because obviously it creates more of a debt burden. Where are we on an estimate of tolls?
Do you want to take on that one recently?
The current modeling centers around a $5 toll in that net range, plus or minus, and that's each direction.
Round trip, $10 a day to pay off. Well, then let me go to my next question. We'll come back to that. So I looked at the stack of money that we have available. We have $105 million of the state's money. We have $261 million in some sort of a federal transportation loan. And then we have the expectation that the private company will float tax-exempt bonds of some $600 million. So that says, unless my stack of money is wrong, that we have about $965 million to build this, of which $105 is grant, so about $850 million in debt. Is that correct?
Well, those numbers don't necessarily have to be additive, Senator Wilkerson,
okay.
Because what Cavada has done is approach the federal programs and said, how much can we create as a line of credit, if you will, that our investors may have access to if they want it?
That's the 261?
That's 261 and the 600 public activity bonds. Now, there's no guarantee that they're going to want it. On the other hand, some parts of that are very, very attractive, so they may. But what we've done through this special SEP, special experimental program, is that right? SEP 15 is a federal process where we had applied, said, would you pre-qualify this project so our potential investors can take advantage of that up to a certain dollar number, and they'll put their own financing plan together. They will decide how much they need to finance. You did hit a very critical point, however. It's going to cost more than just the construction cost. They have to finance more because there's shortfalls. So you prepay debt by borrowing up front. And that delicate balance is not uncommon in many projects, but it's very important in a P3 project when it's a greenfield project.
So then back to the toll. If it's a, let's just say, $850 million project at $10 a day, how many people have to use that bridge a day, let's just say for the first 5 years, in order to make this thing acceptable to the financing community?
That Mr. Nemec has those numbers better than
I don't have those numbers. Obviously, there's a ramp-up period, and so it changes over time fairly quickly. If it was through the chair, if it's possible to get back to you soon with some more information, I'm not the financial person,
sure.
But I believe we can provide the information that would probably be a little more meaningful than us trying to do that today.
A couple of years ago when we were working on this, the estimate of tolls was, if I remember right, George, you correct me, it was a low of 6 and a high of 9. And so now we're down to 5, but the cost of the bridge has obviously gotten more. So that to me is the key question. We can build it for $1 billion if we finance it, but the financing community is going to have to decide what the people that use it are going to support, given that there are options. And not every car that drives the Glen Highway tomorrow is going to drive that bridge. We know that. And nor will that be the case 20 years from now. So I just want to go into this with our eyes wide open. I never met a bridge I didn't like. But I don't like bridges that will come back to bite us if we haven't done our homework. And I am a little nervous when I hear that, well, we're just going to let the finance community decide, because I'm not sure whether they have all the information or we're not getting all the information. And that may be what's driving this bill. And I've never talked to the bill sponsor about it the first time I've looked at it. Mm-hmm. But I think when we look back on some of the latent questions that we have had in the past, we still have those questions today, and it's 3 years later. So I just perhaps give warning that those kind of questions are being floated around this building and probably need to be answered before we spend another $35 million to find out that people would rather just drive the road because $20 is too high.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkins through the chair, let me commit to providing you our latest information on how the cost estimate was compiled and what those numbers look like. We have a chart on the traffic ramp up prepared by one of the best consultants on this traffic toll and revenue issue, and we can provide copies of those charts. And the other was is the, for lack of the technical word, the payback rate, the service on the debt and investment chart, because that is also one, as I pointed out earlier, the first few years are in the red, so you prepay that. But at the time, it begins to balance out. So the dollar ramp up revenue chart, those three things we'll be happy to provide.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from a member of the committee? Senator Cowdery.
Yes. In other meetings, we had talked about the railroad having a crossing at that thing, and we also talked about the integrity of the bridge would have to be stronger with the railroad. If the railroad was going to go across, wouldn't the railroad pay for their, shouldn't they pay for their, the right-of-way to go across there?
Senator Cotter, through the chair, it's pretty clear as we struggle with just building a highway bridge that Kubota is going to be very reluctant to take on the cost of adding a railroad bridge or adding a railroad to a bridge. As you point out, the loading characteristics of railroads are far, far higher than 18-wheelers and personal vehicles. We are, however, following an alignment that would be what we call railroad compatible. In other words, the grade changes and the radius of curvature would be such that a railroad could be laid in alongside of the highway. More details of that will have to be fulfilled later as we get into the more detailed design by the potential investors as part of their proposal. But that's the concept that's in the federal environmental impact statement and one that we adhere to.
But the railroad, just in your opinion, if they decide that they'd like to have it across, shouldn't they participate with their cost of putting that in?
Short answer, yes.
And one last one.
Go ahead, Senator Cotter, yes.
What is the shelf life of all these plans that you got right now, would you say?
Through the chair, Mr. Cotter, members of the committee, I think the biggest concern right now in my mind is the shelf life of the financing. As you all know from the last couple of weeks, the financial community is under great stress right now. The federal programs, in one case, has kind of an expiration date. In another case, they haven't issued the final order, so we don't know what it's going to say, except it probably, too, will have an expiration date. Generally speaking, we have a year. And if we can't put, with our investors, if they can't put a deal together in a year, we'd probably have to start over again. The final environmental impact statement, rule of thumb, typically 3 years. Our technical data, technical provisions, that's long-lasting. The concrete and steel don't change much. What are we getting out here? The terms of the contract, if you will, public-private partnership contract, would be long-lasting. The numbers may change as the cost change or the revenue stream changes. But that framework is good. And that was an expected. This is a 55-year contract. It is exhausting, and it's huge, and it was very expensive. Fortunately, we have one of the leading law firms in the nation. It has written more of these public-private contracts from the government standpoint than any other firm in the nation. And so we think we've got some good advice. We think we've had some talent at the table with us, but the end result will be, have we attracted an investor? Are they willing to pay the state of Alaska sufficiently for this privilege that it's in the best interest of Alaskans? We just don't know as we sit here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Yes, please come forward and state your name for the record if you would.
Good afternoon, Chair, and the rest of the committee here. My name is Bob French, and I'm a co-vice president of the Government Hill Community Council. But I didn't travel down here today to testify about the effects on my community. I'm here to hopefully pass on some of the little-known facts that about the Kinnickarm Bridge that I've gathered over the past 4 years that I've been involved in this project. When the public-private
Excuse me.
Sure.
Just to remind you that we have before us a bill, a particular bill, and your testimony should focus on that bill, if you would, a little bit anyway.
It will, and okay, I think you'll find that it will.
Okay, thank you.
When the public-private partnership was first projected for the Kinnickarm Bridge, relatively little was known about the potential pitfalls and problems, what I would call the other P3. Fortunately, Alaska can benefit from the mistakes and experiences from other states, and we have the chance to make some much-needed changes before Kabatas B3 agreement is completed. And I would like to say that I believe that Senate Bill 268 provides that opportunity to make those corrections to the authorizing statute for Kabata. I've welcomed Governor Palin's emphasis on transparency in state government and was glad to see that the Alaska Gasline Inducement Act included requirements for the public to review and comment on the pipeline applications and for the legislature to approve the pipeline license and its conditions. This proposed bill makes the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority play by the same rules as the GIA. From Kabata's testimony, it would seem clear that the two foreign consortiums are concerned about the light that would shine in on this process. Contrary to what Mr. Nemec said, Senate Bill 268, I don't believe, is a roadblock for Kabata, but it does allow the legislature to perform their necessary checks and balances, which is especially important for a project of this magnitude. I can't believe that provisions that are important for a GIA, one of the likeliest largest projects in the nation's or the world's history for a construction project, would somehow be unworkable for another private sector run project. A vote for this bill is not an anti-growth vote, as some may want you to believe. I believe it's a vote for transparency and accountability to ensure that Kabata's proposed contract with a foreign investor is a good deal for all of Alaska. Kabata's actions have shown that they would prefer to conduct their business in secret. This was seen in their last two board meetings here in Juneau on February 13th and on February 28th in Anchorage. Both times they went into executive session not long after coming to order, skipping over their published agendas. Kabata's decision to vote 30% pay raises for their top staff in 2006 is a more well-known example of their closed-door executive sessions. I think the one other thing here, as Mr. Nemec and Mr. Wirtz pointed out, the consortium have been allowed to review and comment and propose changes to this draft RFP. So far, the public hasn't had a chance to do that. And I think that while you and I can't find out the proposed terms, the fact that those two bidders can not only review but change the terms to meet their needs, this is something that this is why I'm concerned about the legislature needing to be able to review the terms of this contract. After all, our great-grandchildren will still be subjected to the terms of this contract. Kabata likes to say that continued interest by the P3 consortiums is proof that they believe that the project is financially feasible. Actually, the consortiums are still involved in the process because they know that they will be paid for their efforts. On August 17, 2007, Kabata passed Resolution 2107 to facilitate payment of what they call stipends to the consortium. I won't take the time to directly quote from that resolution, but did you know that Kabata authorized themselves to pay for these foreign investors up to $2 million for their trouble if the bridge does not go forward? The Daily News reported on Sunday that the cost for the expansion of the Port of Anchorage went from $227 million in 2003 to $700 million right now, an increase of over 300%. Kabata's estimates of the cost were around $600 million in 2003 and is still, as we heard earlier, floating around $600 million for the cost of the bridge alone, not including all of the financing costs. Do you or the public understand how this is possible? The bridge as originally envisioned was a four-lane bridge with four-lane approach roads. Now it's a two-lane bridge with two-lane approach roads with a future expansion taking place, as Kabata says, when necessary to meet the traffic demands. Senator Cowdery spoke of the accidents and what might happen and how the Glenn Highway may be shut down due to an accident. Even if there's just a small amount of traffic on the bridge, just think of how long it will take to clear out some smashed up cars in the middle of a 2 mile long two lane bridge. I would argue that this is not a real viable asset for the state's transportation system. The approach road on the Mat-Su side is not even being built with proper underlayment or foundation. They're just applying pavement over the existing gravel road where feasible. I'll predict that it will need to be repaired or replaced by the time the bridge is finished. I think that Kubota's contract with these P3 investors has too many impacts and implications to all of Alaska for the terms to remain secret until it is signed. I firmly believe that the legislature needs to review and approve Kubota's P3 contract, and this legislation is the way to make sure that the interests of our children's children are protected. I echo Mayor Begich's comments that a public project of the size and cost like the Kinnick Arm Crossing requires a healthy and transparent public process and a thorough performance-based project agreement. And thanks for your consideration of these important amendments, and I'm available to take any of your questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for the presenters, Senator Cowdery?
Yeah, what's your background? Are you an engineer?
I'm a mechanical engineer, yes.
Mechanical, that's a building engineer?
Correct.
Yeah. And you talk about executive sessions. What is in our system of government, what's the purpose of an executive session in your mind?
Well, I believe that the express purpose is to discuss things which would be harmful to the body if those are discussed in public. And I would have to defer to people who actually would create those laws.
Well, the executive sessions that I've been in has to do with an individual or something that we don't want to exposed to the public, you know, and that type of thing. But anyway, the public is who we're trying to serve here, in my opinion. And I've been into, you said that this bridge is just so old. I came to Alaska when I was 20, and there's been talk about the Kinnick Arm Crossing for years since I've been here, including going from to Fire Island and then another bridge into Anchorage and to come that route, although that's been given up or whatever, it's too expensive or the tides are too bad or whatever. But the Government Hill, if it went somewhere else, would you be in favor of it if it was in some other neighborhood?
Government Hill has actually never come out as being opposed to the bridge. We have been opposed to the choice of routes. I believe that you talk about some of the previous routes. The 1983 draft EIS actually chose a Boniface route as being their preferred alternative. So I think there's some clear possibilities for other routes that could have true benefits to Anchorage and to the Mat-Su Valley. And I'm not convinced that the Government Hill route is necessarily the same. As Mayor Begich says, it will have some tremendous impacts on downtown Anchorage once you start funneling traffic straight through downtown.
The port supplies the whole state, mostly, mm-hmm. Whether it's rural Alaska, Nome, or wherever, and that's downtown. And the trucks come to pick up that freight and transfer it all over the state. And do you think the traffic would be worse than it if we built the bridge than it is now?
There certainly is that possibility. If you look at the comments of the Alaska Railroad, they presently provide most of the gravel that is used throughout Anchorage and throughout the whole Anchorage area in filling in, as you were talking about earlier, some of the wetlands and things like that. To be able to build, you have to fill it with gravel. The gravel sources that the railroad is using right now, they have said are running out, and their estimates were as of the draft EIS time, they could possibly have over 850 gravel trucks per day going through downtown, just because there is good gravel available at Port McKenzie. So, yes, right now the gravel being shipped by railroad doesn't affect any of the real traffic in Anchorage. So, but once you start running the gravel trucks through from Point McKenzie, straight down C Street, down to South Anchorage at O'Malley, where most of the major gravel pits are, yes, it would have a real impact on Anchorage traffic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there aren't any more questions, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Would you please come forward? Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Lois Epstein, and I am director of the Alaska Transportation Priorities Project, which is a statewide transportation watchdog organization composed of conservation groups, transit advocates, community officials, engineers, cargo shippers, and others who are interested in promoting sensible transportation systems and policies in Alaska. Thank you, Chairman Kukesh and members of the committee for your presence and good questions today. I'd also, if I may, would like to enter into the record the letter from Mayor Begich to the bill sponsor, Majority Leader Ellis, as of yesterday on this bill.
It is already in our packet.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I'm here today, obviously, to talk about SB 268, a bill I often refer to as the Kinnickarm Bridge Openness and Accountability Act. The bill provides needed changes and updates to the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority's authorizing statute, which includes language allowing Kubota to enter into a public-private partnership, that's a P3, contract, concession, or agreement. The first change in the bill to the statute, the existing statute, and the one my testimony will primarily focus on today, requires public review and comment on private investor submittals to build and operate the Kinnickarm Bridge, as well as documentation by the state that a proposed contract, quote, sufficiently maximizes benefits to the people of the state, unquote, and a legislative vote on the proposed contract before it is signed. The second change in the bill requires that toll increases be predictable and based on inflation. Without such a change, private investors could raise tolls without regard to traffic impacts on alternative roads or lower-income users of the toll road. With respect to public transparency on investor submittals and a legislative vote serving as a check on Kubota's decision-making, these provisions mirror similar provisions and language in AGEA. Note that AGEA covers a private sector-run project similar to the private sector-run bridge project that we are speaking about today. AGEA 1 allows the public to review and comment on natural gas transmission pipeline applications for 60 days. 2 requires the state to document that an applicant proposes a project that will sufficiently maximize benefits. And 3 requires the legislature to vote on a pipeline license and its conditions. All three provisions parallel what is in SB 268. In my remaining time, I'll provide you with evidence of the need for these changes to Kubota statute, that is, requirement for public comment, state findings, and legislative approval. First, both the governor and a majority of the legislature support transparency and accountability for the pipeline project covered by AGEA, and the Kinnickarm Bridge is a similar major project constructed and operated by the private sector. Second, the need for a transparent process has been recognized by other states. These states are Indiana requires that the state legislature authorize every P3 agreement. Virginia has a transparent procurement process, which Alaska currently does not. Virginia's procurement process includes public hearings, up-to-date information on VDOT's website, public and jurisdictional comment periods, and other activities that allow citizens to participate in the P3 process. New Jersey. A January 2007 study by the Regional Plan Association of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut entitled Proceed with Caution, Ground Rules for a Public-Private Partnership in New Jersey states that the most important policy for addressing these and other complex issues raised by PPPs is full transparency. Only by fully disclosing details of the PPP and allowing sufficient time for analysis and public debate can New Jersey residents be assured that their best interests are being met, both now and well into the future. Texas. A February 2007 state auditor's report on the Trans-Texas Corridor recommends that the legislature consider requiring the Department of Transportation to increase transparency by increasing the public's access to information. A June 2007 summary report on state P3 efforts by USC's Keston Institute for Public Finance and Infrastructure Policy, posted on the Federal Highway Administration website, states that transparency in the P3 process is a key element for public support of long-term concessions. Third set of arguments, the federal model, quote-unquote, state P3 legislation on the Federal Highway Administration website supports public transparency. Section 1-102D states that, quote, the department may consider the following factors in evaluating and selecting a bid or proposal to enter into a public-private initiative: comments from local citizens and affected jurisdictions, and benefits to the public. A fourth argument, a recent publication by a national nonprofit supports public transparency in a legislative vote on a P3 contract. The U.S. PIRG Education Fund's fall 2007 report entitled Road Privatization, Explaining the Trend, Assessing the Facts, and Protecting the Public recommends complete transparency and full accountability, in which the legislature must approve the terms of a final deal, not just approve that a deal be negotiated, as is the case currently with the Kabata statute. Last, Kabata has not shown itself to be transparent and accountable under the current statute, nor has it fully acknowledged the full range of public concerns based on its testimony today. In other words, there are some additional concerns that the public has that were not incorporated into Kabata's testimony when they summarized the public's viewpoint. Both the Mat-Su Borough and Anchorage were not involved in the most recent and most sophisticated cost estimate review study performed in June 2006. Kabata's two most recent open board of directors meetings consisted of a few minutes of public discussion followed by the board going into executive session. And Kabata has refused to release its draft request for proposals to the public while simultaneously releasing that document to private sector P3 applicants, as we heard. In summary, Kabata expects to sign a P3 contract this year that could have enormous financial, social, and transportation system implications for Alaska. We are greatly concerned about leaving all decisions to Kabata's very small, and I would argue, non-representative board. SB 268 should be passed now to provide the necessary checks and balances to ensure that any P3 agreement has been thoroughly vetted by the state, the legislature, and the public. Kabata's argument that an open process will eliminate any possibility of a P3 agreement is contradicted by other states which have such a process in place. There are no showstopper concepts in this bill. However, it is possible that the language might need some slight modification to address Kabata's consultants' concerns, especially regarding tolling. Thank you for your consideration of these important amendments to the Kabata statute. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yes, Laura, what's your background?
Lois Epstein, and I am a licensed professional engineer. I have been for over 15 years.
What kind of engineer?
I'm a civil engineer in Alaska, and I also have a license in Maryland.
Can we have a copy of your testimony?
Absolutely.
Did you write it?
Yes, I did.
I'd like to get a copy and share with the committee.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Sir, welcome. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? We had this originally scheduled from 1 to 3, and because of some conflicts early on, we had to go from 2 to 3. Is the committee willing to hear from 5 people online, or shall we reschedule this for next Tuesday? We can finish this next Tuesday if you'd like.
You're the chairman.
If they've been online, we should go ahead and listen to this one.
What we'll do then is we'll go to Steve Cleary from AKPIRG. Mr. Cleary, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Would you please go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record and give us whatever testimony you'd like to give us, please?
Sure, thank you. My name is Steve Cleary. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, ACPIRG. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I'll keep my comments brief. Our group has been around since 1974. ACPIRG has been focusing on consumer protection and good, transparent government, and that's why we're in support of SB 268, and that's why I'm happy to be testifying in front of you today. We believe that a project of this importance should be reviewed by the public and the legislature itself. We've seen the cost estimates fluctuate, as Senator Wilkin pointed out, which would greatly influence the toll that consumers would be paying each way. And so we're happy to see the consumer protections in this bill to make sure that, that's based on inflation and not simply based on the fact that private investors would need to recoup their investment based on having Alaska pay for that. We've seen the estimate go from $600 million to a federal highway estimate of $639 million. And then in Kavada's TIFIA application, and TIFIA is Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, of an estimate of $845 million. So there's quite a bit of fluctuation with the price, and we're concerned about how that would influence the toll that consumers pay. And as has already been stated, prices of things like gas, steel, asphalt, concrete have all gone up upwards of about 30% in recent years, and so undoubtedly the price of the bridge will go up as well. We think, you know, as Mr. Nemec stated earlier, the state needs to show that it's behind the project. And I think, to us, SB 268 represents a way for the state to show that, say that it's going to investigate and approve any agreement, will really show that the state is if it chooses to be, committed to this project. So we don't see this as a way of sidelining the bridge in any way, but adding transparency and openness, as others have spoke to already. And again, this is a major project and a major investment for Alaska. We believe it deserves public and legislative oversight. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Cowdery, any questions for this gentleman? No. Thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go now, and also in Anchorage, is Suzanne DiPietro from the Anchorage Citizens Coalition.
Yes, I'm here. My name is Suzanne DiPietro, and I'm with the Anchorage Citizens Coalition, a grassroots organization that's devoted to transparency and public involvement in government and responsible growth and good land use decisions. I have followed the public process with respect to this project for years now, and one thing that I wanted to mention is that the public involvement process that has been going on so far has not really focused. The focus has not so much been on the financing piece as on the actual project itself, the route, the alternative, the impact on the environment, the impact on cultural and social resources. And I think it is a misstatement to suggest that the public has had a chance through the public involvement process to understand in any meaningful way what kinds of financial arrangements might be made for the project to go forward. So I just wanted to flag that topic. Essentially, the reason that Citizens Coalition thinks this is an important bill is that Kavada's main mission is to build a bridge that is financially feasible. And although I hear that Kavada's board of directors will take into account best interests of the state of Alaska, I really think that the legislature is in a better position to take into account the best interests of the state of Alaska. You understand the overall budget priorities of the state. You understand the priorities of the project. You understand the people who want to need much better than the small board of directors of Kavada. And in fact, it is more in your work than in the mission of Kavada to take that into account. And I hear about how the markets will decide whether this project makes sense, and I think that's right, it will decide. And I think we can be absolutely 100% sure that no private bidder will propose anything that is not the best financial interest of that private bidder. And I think that any proposals that are going to be coming out of this are going to be very favorable to them. And I think the legislature really needs to be involved to make sure that we're not taking advantage of and that the financing that is put forth by these bidders, the package, the proposal, whatever shape or form it may take, we don't even have any idea, we haven't even seen the draft RFP, it will be very favorable to the proposers and maybe will not be so favorable to the state of Alaska. So I really urge you to include these provisions for transparency, public comment, and legislative oversight of this extremely important project. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the presenter? Well, thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go now to the Matsu LIO, and we'll ask for Darcy Salmon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us, and thank you for continuing your meeting beyond the appointed hour. As stated, my name is Darcy Salmon. I'm the vice chairman of the Kinnick Iron Bridge and Toll Authority. I am the previous mayor of the Matsu Borough from 1997 to 2000. It was when we began to discuss the construction of the Massachusetts Court that we met with Senator Stevens in Washington, D.C., and garnished the money to do that. And in that time frame, the comment was always made that if we can get some activity on that Massachusetts side of that inlet, then we can build the bridge. That came up three times in a 20-minute session. Then we can build the bridge. We can build the bridge. We can build the bridge. The port is there. The rail spur is intended to come there. The prison is being built there. And the intent was and always will be a 360-degree intermodal transportation corridor linking South Central's economy and creating prosperity, progress, and opportunity for, as has been said here today, our children and our children's children and beyond their lifetime. It is disingenuous, I believe, every speaker today that came forward in support of this bill has been ardently and vocally opposed to the Kinnick-Ottawa Bridge and Toll Authority and this project since it first came under the legislative purview that created us. The supporters of this bill have and always have put as a matter of public record their opposition to the bridge. What we at Kinnick-Ottawa Bridge are trying to do, we're just trying to build a bridge, not prevent building a bridge. When the earmarks were stipends were changed and put in the general account of the state, it created a situation where we needed to move forward in a different path. The 3P presented itself. It is an opportunity for us to get a major project with limited liability on the state of Alaska. It's again disingenuous to presume that with Department of Transportation, Department of Revenue, the House of Representatives, the Senate, a past mayor of Anchorage, a past mayor of the Massachusetts Borough, and a past central director of DOT on the Kinnick-Ottawa Bridge and Toll Authority, as well as the incredible staff that we have that work for us, that we are not capable of negotiating this contract with these two private concessionaires. It's also quite insulting the premises that we've gone into executive session as though there's something going on there. I would also bring to the committee's attention that the Attorney General's office is also represented in the executive session with us. The Attorney General's office is represented in everything that we do and every step that we take. And so I feel quite comfortable that they are there to offer the transparency, and that if we were to violate or sidestep the issues that are important to the state of Alaska, I can assure you that they would put their foot firmly on our necks and stop us in that process. Alaska is currently poised. We're in a position to make a major player in a global economy. This bridge is that linchpin. If you've got a $700 million potential port of Anchorage and the ongoing rail spur and Fort McKenzie activity with all the gravel we have on this side, those folks that are going to work in those facilities are going to need a place to live. And as a realtor, we jokingly laugh that in Anchorage, if you're going to build a home on a lot in Anchorage, that lot will be delivered in a dump truck. You folks are out of land in Anchorage, and therefore this side of the inlet, the Point McKenzie side, is laden with just the most beautiful land, and if you could live there instead of a postage stamp lot that has been filled in downtown Anchorage, you would. Back to the Senate bill that's before us, it is a delay. You started with a 60-day public process, then a 60-day review. I can only imagine that 4 months becomes 6 months, if not a year. We have private consortium requests for qualifications. The request for proposal has not been released. The drafts have, so that we can allow them to begin to put together a potential bid for us. That's when the RFP is officially released, that they're not just starting at Dump Street and having nothing to work with. We will be transparent. We will open this to everything. And the legislature, like I said, Representative Stoltz and Senator Huggins sit on the board. DOT's there, revenue's there. This is a bill by design of the supporters that have testified to you today to forestall and be an obstacle to the creation of one of the greatest projects that this state will ever put in place. And I thank you for your time and for listening to me today. As you can see, I'm a little ardent myself about this project.
Hey, you only took two breaths on the presentation.
Who counted those?
I did. Thank you very much for your presentation. Any questions for Mr. Sam? If not, thank you very much. We'll go to Marty Mativa from the Matsu also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee, I appreciate you staying longer than normal, too, as Mr. Salmon alluded to. I'm here just for a few comments, and I represent no special interest groups, no one else except myself, and I think many people out here in Matsu Borough and the Valley as citizens. And today we're talking about an opportunity for growth, an opportunity for economic development, because we are a regional economy. What happens in the borough, Matsu Valley, the borough, affects Anchorage in the economy. And we need to realize that. And that's what this bridge can provide, as Mr. Salmon referred to it as the linkpin, is this is connectivity to the largest city in the state of Alaska, to the fastest growing community in the state of Alaska. And this is where the future is. Anchorage can only go up where the land is out here, the opportunities are out here. And I think that this bill delays by at least a minimum of 4 months. And I would agree with Mr. Salmon's comments where 4 months becomes 6 months, 6 months becomes 12 months, and so forth. And this could result in killing this project. I think this is a wonderful project, a wonderful opportunity. And again, I represent no one except myself and my opinion and the opinion of many people, residents out here, concerned citizens who want to see this state grow and this economy grow. And I want to close with them. It's a fine line between openness, I think, because we all want transparency in government, and killing a bill. And more government is not always better government. Government's not the answer sometimes. Government's the problem. So I thank you for hearing me, and please, reconsider, and I cannot support this bill at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mativa. Is there any questions for him, for gentlemen? No, thank you very much. We'll go now to Cheryl Mativa from the Matsu Wasilla Chamber of Commerce.
Good afternoon. This is Cheryl Mativa. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Wasilla Chamber of Commerce. I represent not only Wasilla, but surrounding communities as well. And I would just like to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 268 and House Bill 365 for a number of reasons. This project has been in the planning stages for 5 years. And for each year, each month that it continues to be delayed, the price of steel goes up, the price of construction, and on and on. And if we're going to control these costs, we need to continue moving forward in a proactive, positive basis. One of the comments made earlier was the lack of transparency on behalf of Kabata, and I would have to directly refute that. We have found that this project has been moving forward, that this board has been very forthcoming, that their staff has not only approached the Greater Wasilla Chamber, but chambers throughout the entire state of Alaska on a regular, continuous basis, offering to do keynote presentations, keep us up to speed and in the loop on what's developing, what's happening, and we have had nothing but 100% transparency. I have spoken with other executive directors throughout the state who have had the same result. And so from the business standpoint, I think this is a beautiful partnership between public and private. I think we need a lot more of this type of partnership to continue to grow in the state and bring ourselves up to par with all of our good states in the south of us, the lower 48. We have an amazing opportunity here to not only build public and private, but also to create an amazing revenue stream for tourism, as well as all the other residual economic impacts. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator? No. Thank you very much for your presentation today. Is there anybody else who would like to make a comment before we close public testimony? If not, we're closing public testimony, and it's intention. Obviously, two of us can't move this bill, so we're going to hold this bill, and we do have some information that's going to be presented to this committee regarding Senator Wilkins and other questions that were asked today, and we'd like to have that to us as soon as we can. We'd like to... if we need to schedule another meeting sooner than later, we'd like to do that. So with that, we're going to close the meeting, and thank you very much for being here today.